Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name's Cormac, and welcome to this live stream with Permaculture Canada. Do you want to just introduce yourselves there quickly?
Yeah, sure. I'm Lindsay Brandon. I'm based out of Calgary, Alberta, and I'm the CEO of Permaculture Canada and Armagarden. And yeah, excited for this conversation.
And I am Graham Towerton, based in Adrian, Michigan, originally from Australia, and I am the Chief Operations Officer for Permaculture Canada.
Well, welcome to this first live stream about what we're going to do in November. First time really doing a live stream, so I'm not sure if this... I just checked Facebook, we are working, so I'm not sure about the rest of it. So, welcome guys. So basically it's about what we're doing as gardeners, designers, professionals, in November, in order to help people, particularly beginner gardeners, people wanting to start, because like you can start any time, and November's as good as month as any. You don't have to wait to January, February. You can start thinking about things and planning and designing. Do you just want to go tell people and share what you're actually doing at the minute?
Yeah, I'll go first because I know Graham's outdoor list on gardening is much larger than mine. I've got out of my parents' place, we have 9 acres. So I was just out there yesterday and we were actually gathering mulch from our shelter belt. Instead of, you know, purchasing mulch, we were just grabbing the mulch that we have from the shelter belt, which is mainly lilac, rows of it, right? So inside there hasn't been touched for a long time. So we've been gathering up the leaves and sticks and things like that and bringing bucket loads of them, filling them with humic and fulvix, mixing that up and putting like all my sweet grass, making sure they're nice and tucked in for the winter and, you know, really literally giving handfuls to each bush and each tree that I planted this year, you know, saying a little prayer for them because that's kind of how I am where I'm just like, you know, want them to feel protected and through the winter. So we were really putting all those perennial trees and bushes to sleep yesterday. In the annual garden, we have straw that we put down, like we're in wide open prairie, right? So we've got massive winds and really super, super dry here. Even when there's snow on the ground, which seems, you know, kind of doesn't make sense that there's all this moisture there, but it's really arid in my climate. So we put straw over top all of the asparagus. We put our garlic in. We cover that up with straw as well. So really, like here in Calgary, Alberta, in the Rocky Mountains, we're tucking things in for winter, right? We're emptying our rain barrels. We're making sure that they're taking off all the taps and things like that so that they don't, you know, blow over the winter and the seals stay okay. And we're emptying the rain barrels as well because we don't want to, you know, have them expand or crack in the winter. So this is just like some of a couple things that we're doing there in terms of the garden. We were going through, you know, all of our squash, making sure that all the squash has been stored in the garage and not touching each other and not covered in dirt so that they're not spoiling very quickly. And things that were starting to spoil, you know, we cut off the spoil and we dug out the seeds and we roasted up anything that was like kind of soft so that it wasn't really going to waste. We were able to roast it and then, you know, put it into the freezer so that we can take it out and make a very quick soup with it. And we weren't totally wasting it. And then, you know, throwing the rest in the compost. Normally, you know, sometimes I'd be also taking my seeds out of there. I'd be harvesting my seeds from the really successful squash that I like, and I'd be saving those for next year. Yeah, so that's a really short, quick, fast answer as far as the annual garden goes. In terms of design, I find like designing for people's properties is not at the forefront of people's minds right now. So I am shifting my focus to other things. I'm doing some mentoring with a budding designer right now as well. So that's really fun, you know, and doing things more in my home is kind of where I'm shifting my focus. I've been doing a lot of travel this year, been doing a lot of site tours and things like that, which has been amazing. But now that the winter is coming along and we're getting snow, it's, you know, instead of traveling, I'm having people come to me to my home office. And like yourself, Cormac, you know, doing podcasts and networking and meeting people and talking through the ethers this way, instead of doing all the travel and stuff like that that I normally have the benefit of doing and love. Yeah. So I don't want to talk too long, but those are two things, two of the subjects of many I'm focusing on.
Yeah. So my place, I've got 7 acres, of which I started with 2.3 acres 10 years ago when I moved here, and then just acquired 4.6 acres last year in September, and didn't really fully take ownership of it till about December. So my activities on part of my property are more mature than others. And where my focus is on that new land. It was farmed in soy and corn and wheat on rotation. And so, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done there in order to convert it into regenerative agriculture. So that's probably where I'm spending a lot of my time from a fall perspective or November perspective is putting in place enough biomass to really protect that soil and regenerate it. So when Lindsay, you mentioned, you know, mulching, you know, that's going to be heavy on my list of things to do, you know, for the next few weeks. We're here in fall right now, and so we've got lots of leaves being collected, you know, and put on the sidewalks for collection. And I typically drive around with my trailer and my truck and try to pick up somewhere between 300 and 500 bags of leaves every year so they can bring them back to the property for two purposes. Firstly is to use them for mulch, for deep mulching. I'll probably put those on the soil at like 18, 24 inches deep, you know, so that I can use it for killing the grass. And then also I'll pile it up and put it into piles for my chickens to use because they'll scratch through it and they'll eat out all the seeds and the bugs, that kind of stuff. And then they'll also be fertilizing it and putting manure into it. So the first activity with the mulching, you know, enables me to put an insulation blanket on the ground so that land that I take over with leaves, whether it's with leaves or with wood chips, the same approach. I put those down so that I can kill the grass because that's my first objective here is to get the grass to the point where it's not going to grow and then, you know, suppress the soil availability and nutrient availability for the other plants that I want to put in the ground. So right out my window here last year at the same time, I put out 10 inches of wood chips on about 3,000 square feet of land. And, you know, I've effectively killed all the lawn in front of my place. I've done it with leaves before, and it works out really good for, you know, really creating that understory, you know, surface layer for the food forest that I build. So, and that's what I did this time last year in that same area. I actually planted. I obtained a lot of bare root fruit trees. They start to become available at this time of the year, typically from like late September through October and into November. You can start acquiring bare root fruit trees. And so I put those in the ground. I also had some leftover stock in my nursery for plants and trees that I'd purchased for some of my customers for landscaping. And maybe they didn't need them or I got extras because they were on special. So I put those in the ground last year and they're all doing very well. That mulch layer, especially with the wood chips and the leaves, you know, one of the things that I end up importing into my property then is the fungal network. It typically comes in on the surface of the leaves or in the wood chips. And when everything starts to decompose, I start building up that fungal network in the soil. So that's really the first big activity that I'll undertake every year at this time is to do lots of mulching. And I mentioned, you know, the other activity to use the leaves for is the composting. So I mentioned piling those up for my chickens to play with. You know, it's a great source of nutrition for them. But it turns out being some of the best compost I think I've ever created. It typically takes me about a year to 2 years to have that all broken down into what we call black gold. So that's another activity, you know, at this time of the year is to get those leaves, pile them up and let my chickens have at them all through the winter. So that's the probably big land management activities that I do at this time of year. I mentioned planting. So from a gardening or farming perspective, I've actually determined that this time of the year is my busiest time for doing most of my planting work because it's somewhat condensed time-wise in between when the first frost occurs and when the ground starts to freeze. You're kind of constrained by those dates. You want to plant, as I mentioned, bare root fruit trees. You want them to be dormant and get those in the ground. So after the first frost is a good time to do that, which for me is mid-October. But then I've got all of the bulb crops. So all of the garlic, daffodils, tulips, saffron crocus, those are all examples of things that I've put in the ground this year. Got myself some very, very good deals on lots of bulbs. I bought 250 daffodils and I think like 500 tulips because I want to have all of that beauty here and I want to be able to propagate those things in the future. So I've planted all of those and still continuing to plant those, you know, while the ground is not frozen. I've got probably 100 pounds of garlic still to plant. So that's going to be an ongoing activity for me and my farm manager for the next couple, 3 weeks while we can. And that's so that I can be at somewhat commercial quantities of garlic for producing it as a seed garlic because it got just super expensive here. Seed garlic was getting north of $20 a pound for organic garlic. In some places, I saw as much as $40 a pound, which I think is just insane. And so in any event, that's a market opportunity for me, for me and my customers to be able to supply them with garlic every year and then also then to sell it for food purposes. So
I don't know if people want to hear the tip about, you know, wearing stilettos to plant their garlic. But I'm just
I don't know that that tip needs to be shared with everybody, Lindsay.
I had to. And can I interject one more thing and then you can have it back? I just wanted to make a comment about the compost and the fact that we're grabbing it off of our own land, you know, and like people are paying for compost, but it's not always necessarily better. Right? Like we have all sorts of compost that's made from human waste in city centers and things like that. So just to like consider that free compost is actually could be better quality than the stuff that you might even go purchase somewhere. Yeah. And I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that, Lindsay. Everything that I produce myself in terms of compost, I believe is far superior in terms of nutritional content, just because of the chicken manure that's in there. It provides me with the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the potassium that's needed from a natural source. But I like the use of wood chips and leaves for composting because generally they're not being sprayed. You know, if you think about maples and oaks and poplars and all the rest of it, all those leaves are not typically treated with any chemicals like lawn clippings might be if you composted those from somebody's property. So I take advantage of those things for that reason first. And people might say that it takes a long time for wood chips to break down, but I've not experienced that, especially when the chicken manure gets mixed in with it. The decomposition process seems to be a lot more rapid. And I've produced some fairly decent compost from wood chips in about a year. You know, what I do is I sift it to remove all of the chunkier pieces of wood chip, and then I end up with, you know, again, black gold that Cormac, I think I've sent you pictures before. I put it on top of my vegetable gardens, and, you know, 2 or 3 inches deep is a great way to put it on. And, you know, that's another activity that I'll do for prepping all my fall garden beds. My next activity in terms of planting at this time of the year is to take advantage of all of the cold climate crops that do particularly well here in Michigan and can do well all through winter, whether they be in cold frames or greenhouses. So things like kale, all of the brassica family, broccoli, etc. If planted in, even at this time of the year, I can still get them to grow in a greenhouse or in a cold frame. But certainly things like lettuce and radishes, you know, so I can put those into a cold frame right now and harvest them all through winter. So there's lots of different things that I think if people take a look at it, one of my favorite books is by Nikki Jabour. It's the year-round garden, year-round vegetable garden. And if you take a look at that book, she's got some really inexpensive designs for cold frames and straw bale gardens and all kinds of different things. And I think she operates in zone 3, if I'm not mistaken, in Canada. And so, you know, if she's able to garden year round in her zone 3, then I certainly can in my zone 6 here in Michigan. I encourage everybody who's, you know, got a somewhat warmer climate to take advantage of what can be grown through the winter. That's a good start.
Your turn, Cormac.
For me, well, I'm still picking fall gold raspberries. They're still doing well. Still getting nasturtiums flowering, which is nice. this year's been a my garden has been on pause because I've done different things. Like I got rid of the chickens this year because I was going to move and then I decided not to. So now this year for me is about building that back up again, but building it on a more integrated system. And so sort of designing the system instead where before I was just going, oh, I'll get chickens, got the chickens. And then I was just growing different stuff, making potato beds. And then next year I wouldn't, they would take them out. So this sort of now November, December, I'm trying to plan to start building them structures and get them in place for January, February. They hit the ground running come spring. Not to grow a wild pile of stuff, but just to propagate out things like the fruit trees. Now they're going dormant. Just to point out as well, all this is different to your climate. So our three climates are quite different. I'm in zone 9. But again, it's not a Florida zone 9. It's a we have low light. I'm way up high. I think we're same level as Nova Scotia here. Sort of. I think we're 55 degrees north. So although it's warm, we get very little light. And I think it's just only 6 or 7 hours a day. So I live on a north facing mountain hill. So like I get no light from basically October to March, particularly out the back. So I just have to balance that out. So it suits me because then I just don't have to sort of worry about anything for that. This next 4 or 5 months because I'm not growing anything, so it's a break. I just have to be ready. And then this year I'm trying to out things like starting things inside early. I'm getting a new garage roof on, so I'm going to put a seed starting place on that so I can actually get a jump in the season, which I haven't done on a I haven't used the lights to get a jump, so I don't know how much of an advantage it's going to be. So that's what I'm thinking about at the minute. And then just tidying up. The place is a mess. I only take Instagram photos of one for, you know, certain angles. So just getting that sorted. So say for someone now who's brand new and is just starting out, less than this first time, when I want to get into permaculture, what can they do now this month to sort of set themselves up?
They can think about where their garden's going to be if they don't have a garden. Like now is the time that you want to start actually with your design, you know, reaching out for help and looking for somebody to help you figure out where is the best placement for that. And there are a lot of things that you can do over winter to prepare that site. You know, even if you can just get your concept of your site and your layout now, so that if you do need to, say, kill grass or amend your soil, or maybe you can grow a cover crop depending on which environment you're in. You know, maybe you just need to add some biomass for us before winter's the ideal time that you're going to be adding this sort of thing so it can decompose over the winter. So that's one thing that you can do. Right now, like all our tree sales are, they just start to open up. A lot of our nurseries, they're like just reopening up and they're taking those pre-orders so that they can, you know, by the spring have the right amount of plants that they need to grow. This kind of gives them that leg up in terms of their numbers. They can get their pre-orders in. So right now we're doing a lot of that. I'm looking at what do I already want to purchase for next year, and I can get those orders in right now, which is really wonderful. And just think about like my mother and I, we do a lot of gardening together out in the property that we're at there yesterday. So having those conversations, you know, if you have had a year of gardening experience, you know, what has worked, what doesn't work, what did you harvest that you didn't eat, right? Like, are there certain varieties that maybe we won't plant next year because we, you know, had too much or we found we weren't going to consume them? So kind of like reanalyzing that sort of thing. But that's more of a beginner gardener phase. So if you were like just totally starting from scratch, you know, this is a great time to start educating yourself and getting informed and watching videos, and, you know, finding those niches of what are you interested in. Is it, you know, is it plants, is it flowers, is it edibles, is it mycology, that sort of thing. And there's a lot out there, a lot of free information out there too. So yeah, looking into stuff online.
Good comments there. Picking kiwis, grapes, and digging a few spuds. Yeah, I still have potatoes in the ground myself, and I've actually had some over winter here before, so I'm kind of experimenting this year by trying to leave some in the ground and see what comes up in spring. But I've still got potatoes to harvest. I've still got some garlic to harvest, and it might be a little bit too late. I think it might be like setting down its next year's roots. And so I probably will have one garden bed that's just going to be jam-packed loaded with garlic next year. In terms of other harvesting, you know, like you, Cormac, I'm still getting raspberries on some of my raspberry vines as well. So I've finished with all of the things that got frosted out, like the tomatoes. But you know, the next step is... The next step is to start preserving a lot of the harvest as well. So I've got a few things that we harvested this year, like peppers, where I got an abundant crop of cayenne and serranos and habaneros. And for the first time, I grew some Trinidad scorpion peppers just for fun, mainly because I want to produce enough seed that I can grow them next year. So one of the big activities that I have, and I encourage all beginning gardeners to do, is to collect their seed. At this time of the year is when you'll start producing lots of seed from different crops. So with the example of my peppers, I've been bringing those in and I've been stringing them up. Lindsay, I think you've seen the pictures of those strung up in my kitchen, the serranos and cayenne peppers. But I've also been collecting the seed out of them. I harvested four different kinds of tomatoes, got all the seed out of those, fermented them so that, you know, I can get the gel off them and the sugars off them, and then dried them out. I've got them in my seed packets. I got basil seed still to harvest. But over the last couple, 3 weeks, we've also been harvesting all of the different herbs that we want, that we've grown through the summer. So things like lemongrass, lemon balm, lemon verbena, basil, all of the different things that we wanted to bring in and dry. We've got probably half a dozen others as well, but we've been just stringing those up with some twine indoors so that they can dry out, and then we can decide if we want to grind them up or just use them as dried full herbs. That's a good thing to do at this time of the year, so that you can preserve your harvest all the way through the winter and into the spring. We had the opportunity last night. We had pumpkin soup, which was made with French shallots and garlic, all three ingredients from my own farm. So I think that's only the fourth time that I've made a meal where the majority of the ingredients came from my place. But all of those were examples of things that we preserved. The pumpkin was actually last year's pumpkin grown in the summer of 2023, stored in our basement all through winter. Then I processed it, put it in the freezer so that we could keep the pulp, and then we drug it out of the freezer and used it for last night's dinner. So this time of the year is where you put all of those things away for storage, whether it's roots like beets, potatoes, etc. Put them into your basement or a cold storage unit if you've got one, or a root cellar if you've got one. Time to store all of those things and then decide what you want to do with the abundance that you harvested from your garden.
Yeah, I think too this time of year is good, and I always regret not doing it. When it comes to spring, is covering a bed that you might want to develop next year, is either cover it in cardboard and put wood chips on it, and then as you say, Graham, you just put the 8 to 10 wood chips in. But if you don't have that amount of wood chips, cardboard, I've read this week that if you put plastic on it, that plastic can leach into the soil. I have used plastic in the past to create beds just by covering black plastic, weighing it down with bricks. And then come spring, then you just remove it and everything's dead. It's a lot easier to plant them there.
Yeah, it certainly is. That solarizing with plastic, it's a common practice. I don't use it anymore because I end up finding that the plastic will break down enough that it ends up getting destroyed by the UV light from the sun. And then I end up with plastic all through my garden, or sometimes I forget where I put it and maybe dig it up 2 years later. So I don't use that as a practice anymore. And I've also stopped using the cardboard because I would always find myself using recycled cardboard with plastic tape on it, inks of unknown origin. I'm always digging up staples out of my garden from some of the staple boxes. So I've stopped using the cardboard just for that reason. It's just messy and hard to get enough of it to be effective with. So I find that just using a deeper layer of wood chips or leaves is the better way to go. And when I do that, Cormac, you know, when I put down, you know, that 18 or 24 inches of leaves, it tends to get enough moisture into it that it holds in place. Even though I get straight line winds from the west that might be 30, 40 miles an hour during the wintertime. And then when the snow gets in on top of it, that helps to pack it down and keep it moist and in place as well. But I've been out in the middle of February and opened up the leaves and found the worms working at the surface because the ground hasn't frozen and that insulation blanket's in place. So certainly encourage folks at this time of the year, that's the best thing that they can do in preparation for next year for their beds is to put those leaves or other mulch on top.
Yeah, and it's nice to see here there's like a movement towards like quit raking your leaves, people, right? Like we get to shift the mindset, right? We don't need it to be like perfect. And actually this is going to help our ecosystems of our bugs and things like that, right? So that it serves the populations that can't speak for themselves. So we have that one in the fall where it's like, I don't know what the tagline is, no rake something rather. But then there's no mow May. Right. And no mow May means exactly that. Like, do not mow. Do not, you know, let everything grow wild. And I'm seeing it already happen in BC. It looks like, you know, in Revelstoke is a particular town that I've seen a lot where it's like, well, they've really been doing this for long enough now that people are letting their yards go completely wild in May. And the, you know, it might be knee high grasses and they'll just mow a little path through it to their house. And then they can do whatever they want later on. But, you know, it's giving that time for the ladybugs and, you know, the bees and everything like that to have a nice long rest without disturbing it because people are often, you know, making aesthetic choices towards their gardens and they want to like get rid of the debris and get rid of all the biomass that's doing so much lovely work for us, right? Like our free nourishment and things like that, that is serving these populations that cannot speak for themselves. So, you know, those are something that if you're new to gardening, you know, I think that's one of the biggest things to debunk is the aesthetics of what you think gardening looks like. And what is actually going on when we start to consider these other ecosystems in play.
Yeah, there's two things here. So I don't mow the garden. I haven't done it now for a few years. So the first year I did it, hundreds of dandelions. But now, maybe 4 or 5 years later, probably half the amount of dandelions because they're actually doing the job that they're there for. So I think it's important to shift that mindset as well. They say that the dandelion is actually doing you a favor. It's actually working your ground. So don't be cutting it in May. And then the other thing here, culturally here, we have a thing called the last cut where people mow their grass to as short as they possibly can for the winter because knowing that it's not going to grow and it'll look really nice over the winter. So it's like, looks really nice. So then, of course, what happens then, it's cold here, it's damp, and then a lot of moss grows. And then come May, they're scarifying their lawn and they're putting chemicals on it to kill the moss. And it's bonkers. It's like that. So they get rid of all the leaves, take all the fertility away, cut the grass, moss grows, they scarify it, they kill the moss, and then they're putting fertilizers on. And it's, to me, it's madness. Just leave the leaves. Let the grass long and you'll have no moss problem and you'll have no fertilizer problem. But that's culturally ingrained in here and people will actually talk, oh, have you done your final cut yet? I got the final cut and they'd be really proud of their final cut. Like they can put the mower away for the winter.
Wow.
That's just daft.
It's so interesting. So it's like, now how can you go about that? How can you like turn that problem into the solution sort of thing and like take that phrase of final cut to like switch it to something more regenerative? Like, I wonder what that would be. I'm just dropping that in your bucket.
Just reject the final cut. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Reject the final cut. I do my last mow probably in late August. You know, it's when the grass is pretty much dormant. It's not growing much after that. So unless we get a lot of rain, and then it might. But typically I leave it 8 to 10 inches tall because what I want it to do is to capture all the snow, have that infiltrate into my land because it puts that all that extra moisture back into the soil. So I think leaving the grass longer in my location is the right thing to do because it just helps me to get more moisture back into the ground when I need it most, which is in spring.
Yeah, no, like another good thing to do right now is plant propagation, sharing plants with your friends, things like that. Because the plants aren't in their active growing phase, this can be a really great time to start sharing them, you know, because you can still see them. If you do it in the spring for some plants, you know, the shock of dividing them in the spring when they're just entering their most active growing phase, the outward, you know, can shock some plants and they might not like it as much as they would in the winter or like on in the fall. Now that it's already cooler and it's going dormant, you know, they're not in this active outward like they would be in the spring where it's like, ah, here's the spring. It's the fall, right? So they're kind of going into themselves. And so they're a little bit more dormant and it can be a little nicer to them if you're going to, you know, be breaking them up to share with your friends to do that now. And then establishing them in your garden, you know, you could put them in and you can water them in, but they're not going to have this really active root phase growing with the very fine roots that would be, you know, susceptible to freezing right away. So it's okay to be moving them, watering them in and leaving them, and they still won't be growing in that super active phase. And then just make sure you mulch them up in like a little blankie, tuck them in.
Using go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say with the bulbs that, you know, the time to dig them up is obviously when they've gone dormant, which is really just before you would plant them again at this time of the year. So we first started planting our garlic here about 3 weeks ago, and already it's got roots that are about 2 inches long. So it doesn't take long for the bulbs because this is the time that they'll put their roots down, but they'll put up part of their shoots. Their leaf growth will start to take place, especially with garlic. Some of the other bulbs will do the same. They'll start generating their growth tips of their leaves, even though they're under the soil. So now's the time, or actually a few weeks ago is the time to actually harvest those if you're going to do your sharing of your bulbs. Certainly you wouldn't want to do it in the spring because that's when they're really active in their growth. Things like the daffodils and the tulips, some of the things that come up the earliest, you would never do that division or harvesting at that point for sharing plants.
Yeah, well, I used somewhere I have a 12-month schedule basically of what can be done when. So basically got my plant list and just went through it one by one. Threw it on the ChatGPT as well to see what that came up with. Just give me a list of when they propagate stuff. So some stuff I can't really do now, I've left it too late, like the bamboo and hostas. I think they need a bit of growth, a bit of heat. But the likes of fruit and stuff, I can propagate that. And then I want to move the raspberries so I can dig them up once they go dormant and move them, get a more sort of level hedge is what I'm aiming for. So I suppose that's an important thing, writing down what you want and figuring out when you have to work it. So November's a good time for that.
Yeah, and some raspberries, since you mentioned those, right, is a good time, you know, if they're certain varieties of raspberries where you want to cut the canes back, you know, on the ones that were blooming and producing raspberries this year. Then there were the new canes that came up during the summer that didn't produce fruit. You're going to want to be cutting down those canes that were producing fruit because the ones that didn't produce fruit this year will next year. So that's just something for certain raspberry varieties are that way.
All the primer cane varieties. That's what you want to, yeah. I've just taken out all of the dead wood from all my raspberries, which was all of last year's summer growth. Some of the varieties that I've got will produce a second quick crop from the second year canes, you know, which is usually the first crop I'll harvest in the spring, and then they'll die off in the summertime. For my blackberries especially, that's the case. So I've taken all of those out just in the last week, all the dead canes, and you can tell the difference pretty easily because if you can't snap it, there's a good chance that it's still living. And so I just find all the ones which are really woody and that will easily snap, and those are the ones that I'm taking out. And then that, you know, freshens up the area, and also allows then, you know, the plant to focus all of its nutritive activity the next year on the canes that are actually living. Sometimes I'll prune out some of the other ones as well. So pruning is, you know, an activity that I always like to do at this time of the year because the plants are dormant. So pruning of the berry canes, pruning of apple trees, pruning of my cherries, those are all activities that we've done. And I'm generally personally against pruning as an activity. I kind of like to believe that nature knows what it's doing when it creates a tree or a plant, but, you know, but there are benefits for pruning. And so I'm a minimalist, I guess you could say, when it comes to that. I'm usually doing it just so that I can get branches that are crossing each other and stop them from rubbing against each other and damaging them. I'll cut those out. I'll cut out the branches that are preventing my easy access into the rest of the tree or from walking around it, so that I can improve access through my orchards, because I've got spacing that's very much closer than what you might typically see in a fruit orchard, where you might have like 20 feet spacing between trees in an apple orchard. I've got like 8 or 10, so things are densely packed together. And so pruning becomes somewhat necessary for me to have my access. So that's an activity that I do right now. Taking out all of the dead branches is the other thing that I'll do. And again, with certain fruit trees, you've got to be careful with your pruning, because some of the branches are the ones that are going to be producing your next year's fruit. So on my peaches, as an example, the first year doesn't necessarily have any fruit on it, but the second and subsequent years are the ones that produce the fruiting buds. So I'm minimalist in my approach for that reason, is I don't want to cut out anything that might be fruit production, and just focus on removing the dead branches or which are limiting my access.
So how do you manage all that stuff, Graham? Because I think you're on a bigger scale, I think, than myself and Lindsay. How do you manage all these tasks that somebody could take the smaller garden and actually somebody's into? Because it can be quite intimidating at the start when you start gardening. It's like all these stuff you want to grow, but like you have to, you know, hold the reins a wee bit and say, right, how do I get like 10 things right, and how do you manage all that?
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, there's one of the permaculture principles of, you know, slow and small solutions, and so I'm learning perhaps the hard way the reason for that one to exist, because, you know, I have taken the approach in the past of going gung-ho and putting in lots of plants in a hurry. You know, at one location, I planted 300 fruit trees in one year, and that became a challenge, not the first year in getting them planted, but in the second and subsequent years in maintaining them. You know, 300 fruit trees is somewhat between 3/4 of an acre and an acre of land that you've got to manage, you know. So all of that activity taught me the lesson of just starting small. So my actual food forest out here that I've got, you know, on the west side of my property is just 6,000 square feet. So it's just a little bit more than a tenth of an acre. And so I've focused on putting everything very densely, you know, to keep the space smaller to manage first, you know. So by planting densely and keeping the area small, I've got less mulching to do, less distance to drag my hoses to irrigate during the dry weeks. You know, so it's more concentrated in terms of the space that I have to manage, and therefore it requires less work. I've got a larger family, and when they were here, all my kids would be helping me, right, whether they wanted to or not. So, you know, there's that. But now that they've gone, you know, most of them have left the home except for my youngest two. I've actually hired a person to come and work here. So Julia is now my farm manager, and she's helping me because I've expanded the area to cover that 4.6 acres that I just acquired. So I do need help for that. But, you know, we've made a decision that we're going to focus on this 6,000 square feet on the West Garden so that we can truly steward that well, as opposed to the approach that I've been taking, which has been a little bit random and haphazard. you know, and what else can we put into that space? Because it's already got all the infrastructure in place, you know. So that's the, you know, 10 years that I've been here, I've put a lot of infrastructure like fencing and water tanks and hoses and all of those types of things are already in place. So how do we take advantage of all of that infrastructure that's already there with small, slow, incremental improvements within that garden? So even just the basics of my vegetable beds are things that I'll put in one or two a year rather than trying to do 20. You know, I'll keep adding into that space with new vegetable planting beds so that, you know, I'm not killing myself with the labor of looking after it. Now that food forest is at a point where I probably expend about, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours a year in pruning, probably 5 or 6 hours a year in mulching, and all the rest of it is planting and harvesting. And with all of the trees that are established, I don't really have a lot of work that I have to do each year with those. It's more my annual garden beds that occupy most of the time in terms of planting and harvesting. I made the mistake 1 year of planting 300 tomato plants. I'll never do that again. You know, because it became impossible to manage that many. And I had lots of different varieties. It was kind of an experiment that I wanted to grow lots of them, but I will just never do that again unless I wanted to be in commercial production of tomatoes to sell the plants. I don't think I'd ever grow that many again. So if my encouragement is in one aspect for new gardeners is to start very small and master the activity rather than starting on a grand scale and then maybe damaging your career as a gardener because you find yourself left with so much work, it becomes frustrating and hard to manage and you end up not gardening at all. And I've reached that point a couple of times of being burnt out by trying to manage larger pieces of land. So I get that. So start with one or two vegetable beds, a few fruit trees, a few shrubs, and start that way so that you can absolutely master the activities that those plants require.
Yep. So, Lindsay, I think you mentioned earlier it's a good time for education, learning, books, YouTube videos.
Yeah, really, like, this is really a good time to get your PDC, for sure. You know, over winter, that's, I know what I did, and I absolutely enjoyed that as a Canadian when it's minus 40 outside. There's, you know, sit by the fire and get some education. So, like, each year I've been pretty much doing something. You know, I did Elaine Ingham's Soil Food Web courses. I did Mark Shepherd's Agroforestry for Farmers course. So I always find, like, over winter, like, that's where I have a little bit more space, right? Because I'm staying home. I'm not traveling as much. You know, you usually can go at your own pace for a lot of these things, especially if they're online. So that's great. And then, you know, for myself, also creating educational content is also what I'm up to with Permaculture Canada, right? So all those ideas and all those things that have come to me all year long about people saying, oh, we need more information about this, right? Now I can come back to my desk and, you know, be all cozy in winter and hone in on specific subjects where I've been asked specifically for more knowledge in this area to create small course content. So that's more or less what I'm doing with Permaculture Canada. But yeah, getting education for yourself is also a really good time over winter because you're usually kind of staying put more often.
More hibernation.
Yeah. I had two other things to add to the earlier one. I just wanted to throw down too that I didn't talk about. It's more intermediate garden stuff, but snow fences, right? To be filling your ponds and things like that, or creating some sort of like infiltration of water into your land. Snow fences can be put up now before the snow comes, right? To capture that water and to direct it on your topography. Again, more of an intermediate gardener concept. And then the vermiculture, the worm bins, right? Going through the worm bin and making sure that, you know, they give them a nice home for winter. We have to bring our Amazonians in inside. Of course, they can't stay outdoors. So it's a great time to, you know, go to your worm bin and give them a nice comfy home for winter because we have to bring them inside. So, you know, separating them and making sure you have the right amount of species for the bin that you have. And yeah, okay, circling back, next conversation.
No, just mention the worms there.
Don't forget about the worms.
I was bring a like a backup stock inside just in case we get a really cold snap. I think 1 year we got the minus 15 here, but that's like a 1 in 20-30 year event. But I always just do it just in case instead of leaving it at the last minute. That's just a wee backup. but I leave them outside in the compost.
Yeah, so Lindsay mentioned education, and right here, you can see my favorite thing in the world is a book. So I purchase a lot of books probably through the summer, probably absolutely, definitely more than I can read during the summer. And so your education as a permaculture designer or consultant obviously doesn't stop once you get your PDC. Continuing education is important. I know Cormac, there are lots of different courses that, you know, that you can recommend in that regard for what happens once you've got your PDC. But my favorite are the books and the magazines, you know, stuff that I've acquired over a number of years. And, you know, when the snow's outside and, you know, that minus 50 weather, we get probably minus 25 here, and that, no worse than that. But it's brutal to be outdoors. You don't want to be outdoors doing anything at that point. So, you know, that's a good time to curl up beside the fire, read a book, if you can stay awake that long. And, you know, that's when I get all my education done, is through the wintertime, you know, whether it's with courses. I like to watch a lot of YouTube videos. I got a few favorites. Perhaps my favorite is Charles Dowding in the UK in Cornwall. He's got some really, really good videos to watch, and I think are targeted at folks who are beginning gardeners. You know, different techniques with no-dig gardening is his preferred method. And, you know, I learn a lot from his videos myself, you know, in terms of testing the envelope for what things will grow. I never used to be a person that would plant more than one cycle during a growing season. You know, with the way things are going in my climate at the present time, we had super warm spring and super warm fall last year, which really meant that I had about 10 growing months. And so, you know, from that, I've been able to learn, you know, if I get after it in the early spring by having my seedlings prepared, and that's a whole separate subject about what you can grow during the wintertime. But in any event, you know, if I have those seedlings ready where I can get outdoors and get them in the ground, then I can do my succession planting and get two or three crops of certain things, you know, within my growing season. So that's another thing to do during this time of the year, is to start planning, obviously, for next year. What am I going to grow? You know, so going through the list of all of the things that I like to eat and my family likes to eat, what can I grow here? Brings it down to a smaller subset. And then what have I got seed for? You know, and I like to harvest my own seed. That's something I've been doing for 30 years in total. Sometimes I'll find myself, hey, I want to grow something different. And so I'll pull out a seed catalog, you know, and go through that at this time of the year to work out what seed do I need to purchase so that I can have it available to plant in the early spring. So then planning out, okay, how much land do I need to have in order to grow that next crop? You know, so if it's something like basil, you know, we don't need very much space for basil, but if I want to grow a new type of squash, you know, then I might need, you know, substantially more land in order to have that squash available to me. Mapping all of that out, this is the time to do it.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah, yeah, see the dreaded seed catalog. Yeah, we end up over ordering every year.
always do that. But, you know, that's also fun in a way, is that I'll find myself with, you know, packets of seed that might be partially used, or ones that I didn't open and didn't get to at all. And then I'll set myself the challenge. I've got a spreadsheet that I use to manage all of that with all of the dates when things expire. And, you know, then I try to challenge myself to put those in the ground next year. So I'll specifically go through and color code those ones so that I can make sure that those are going to go in the ground first. And then, you know, I've had myself sometimes a situation where the particular varieties that I wanted to grow stop becoming available from the seed suppliers, you know. So that's another encouragement that I give to people, to save their own seed. I've got one variety of cherry tomato that I've now been growing pretty much wild from seedlings every year, that have just come up from seed that's overwintered in the ground. It's called Tess's Land Race, and it's not available from any of the seed manufacturers that I've purchased from before. So this year I took the approach of actually harvesting the cherry tomatoes so I can capture the seed, just in case I don't get those seedlings coming up wild like I've had for the last 6 years, so that I've got it available.
Yeah, makes it more resilient as well. So just on the training there, with 10 minutes left. So if you go to the Vine Permaculture site, we have a number of recommended trainings from your PDC to post-PDC courses. Like there's a design course on there to help you get your first base map, get a website up and running. There's a business design course on there. There's a Learn to Grow courses we have listed on there. So if you just go over to that, there is a pile of courses listed there. Just for whatever level you're at, there's an option there. So for someone wanting help, what does Permaculture Canada offer the beginner gardener to give them that helping hand, get them started, avoid type one errors, save a lot of time?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of, you know, educational content in the videos from the site tours that I'm doing and the people that I'm meeting. So it's really interesting just to see what they're up to and learn from other people's experience. So I have a Rumble channel. It's called Regen Life as well. The same videos are on the Permaculture Canada YouTube. We have a chat on Telegram. So that's kind of a nice way just to enter and just start seeing people talk about stuff, and you can ask questions in there. So there's a Telegram loop. We do design, of course. That's what we specialize in. We are a design firm. So we're there to help you either in a consulting way and kind of like a walk with me program where we can meet you where you're at and offer what you need specifically, or we can go right to, you know, a full scale design for your yard all the way up to eco communities. And then also, you know, collaborating with people in terms of coming up with educational content for their needs. So community centers, things like that, larger organizations where we're working with maybe a small principal like rainwater capture and creating educational content for you on one specific thing. What else, Graham? We're on all the socials, so you can definitely follow all the socials, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. We're all over the place in terms of just kind of like seeing what we're up to and having updates of all the different people that we're meeting as we grow the network of regenerative consultants and product suppliers all over the world.
And then site visits at this time of the year is something that can still be done. I mean, it's, you know, the growing season's essentially over for most folks. Spring's, a long way away in perspective. I've done 3 site visits in the last 3 weeks, one over in Ohio and 2 here locally in my own town. And that's a really good start for some of these folks. A couple of more experience. They've had their own gardens for some time, but they want to expand out and they still need that advice in order to do that. So as a professional, this is a time where you can, you know, still get some good work done. And going back to some of those things that I mentioned before that can still be done at this time of the year, you can still plant some of your bare root fruit trees. So subject to weather, at this time of the year, I can still do site visits. I can still plant some things. And you know, last year being a measure of how late in the season we can sometimes go, I was still doing some landscaping work in the first week of December and was able to start back up again in the spring in late February, believe it or not, because we just had a tremendously warm and mild winter. So, you know, this is the time of the year to plan for those types of things to happen so that, you know, if you do get struck with great weather, then you're able to move forward with folks. So that's why I encourage now as a professional, if you can organize to do some site visit work and then advertising and marketing activities. I mean, this is the greatest time to do all of that. When people start to go into that hibernation mode like me, I'll start reading the seed catalogs and the books and start thinking about what kind of garden can I have next year. I want to capture the attention of people who are doing that. So it might mean now's the time to put ads into home and garden magazines, you know, for people who are going to look at those things through the wintertime. And then networking obviously is a great thing to do at this time of the year as well as a professional. Continue to build those relationships with the folks that might bring, you know, value to what you're doing, whether it's through collaboration or strategic partnerships with products that they might offer. So that's a lot of the work that Lindsay does all through the year and will continue, obviously, during the wintertime.
Yeah. So for us here, we have a blog as well, Beginner Gardeners. So you go over and have a look at that. There's articles on how do you basically start and an introduction to some of the basic concepts like compost and water. It's not a full comprehensive. It's very basic, aimed at just getting introduced to the concepts before you go on further and look more on YouTube, at least just give you that grounding. And as well, check out all our podcasts as well, where we chat to professionals about what's possible. Just be warned that once you start going down this rabbit hole, there's no turning back. there's plenty of resources out there for people. And do you offer discovery calls as well?
Yeah, we do, through our website. So you can book a call with us. We've got designers all over, east, west, north, all the way from Canada down to Nicaragua. So people in all sorts of different growing zones, and you can have a free consultation with us. And if you'd like us to assist you on like what's next and how can we serve you best.
Great stuff. Any final thoughts?
I think you're awesome, and I'm glad you're using this StreamYard, and thank you for starting this for people, you know, to be providing information. And yeah, I appreciate you having us on here today.
Absolutely, Cormac. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to chat with you and also with Lindsay. So thanks for having us here today.
That's great. And thank you for helping me out and for giving some great advice there. So guys, all the links are below if you want to check out Permaculture Canada website. And if you want a free discovery call, I think it's 30 minutes, no obligation chat, just to see where you're at and what your next steps would be. And then if you want to design, a great team there over at Permaculture Canada can get that sorted for you. And thanks very much for those who joined us in this first live stream. Hope it wasn't it was enjoyable for you and you all learned something. Definitely an experience for me. Thanks very much, guys.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, and we'll get these varieties in our episode of the Permaculture Vine coming out. And you can check out all our socials as well. Cheers.